Yeah. I've had a blast preaching through Proverbs, and I've heard lots of discussion about it. So it's bittersweet that we've come to the last sermon in our Proverbs series. We've come to the last sermon because next Sunday Pastor Wendy is speaking, and then the Sunday after that is Advent, the lead up to Christmas, if you can believe it. So this is our last sermon, the last message, the last look at the book of Proverbs. And we've taken so many topics that we've looked at. We just spent 3 weeks looking at how we speak. Words are superpowered. On the other hand, in some situations, words can be very weak. And we looked at what makes for wise words. And we're going to close this series with a message that I think could only be really effectively shared from Proverbs. And that is, what makes a good friend? It seems like a very simple, practical, plain, almost mundane topic. But the book of Proverbs has a tremendous amount to say about friendship and what makes a good friend. I can't remember if I've shared this with you, but I know we have a number of newer people with us, so I'm going to give it another shot. When Ryan was just about to be born, actually, just after he was born, I think, I finally bit the bullet and jumped on the Facebook bandwagon. My wife jumped on it first, and then I joined her, and reluctantly. But there is something magical about seeing the friend request thing go up. I don't know what the draw is, but when you see new friend request, and it does something to you, and you think, oh, well, that's kind of nice. They want to be my friend. I'll be their friend. It's very high school all over again. So, of course, it quickly became a competition between Donna and I, who could have the most friends. And if you know us at all, she's the total natural winner, but I had a whole congregation to manipulate. So she's going, connecting with all these friends, and I'm just throwing it out there to you. Of course, everyone in the congregation that friended me friended her, so it kind of backfired. But we had this, we watched the numbers roll up, but I was looking at this topic this week, and there's some very sad things out there. Since then, I don't know if you know, I went on Facebook hiatus. I actually deleted my account and gave up on it because I was just tired of having to check it all the time. And then I realized that the best way to talk to anyone in the church or get the message out quickly is through Facebook. So I'm back on. But this time, I'm not a friend junkie. I will become friends with anyone, of course, but I'm not attaching my self-worth to that little red counter in the upper left-hand corner of the screen that says, Bing, you have two new friend requests. Maybe this doesn't resonate with any of you. Maybe I'm the only one. So be it. I think Facebook has done a lot to, it's done a lot of good, but it's also done a lot to cheapen the word friendship. I mean, they should have different categories. They should call it acquaintances or random people I may have met at one point at a party 3 years ago that my sister was talking to and I wanted to see what she was doing, so I looked her up. You know what I mean? We need different categories because, honestly, most of the people that are on our friends list on Facebook, if we're on Facebook, are not friends. They're people we met or they're acquaintances. I mean, one of my favorite bands in the entire world is the Choir. I don't know how many people have heard of them. They were like a huge 80s hit, but they're doing new music today that sounds incredible. They're actually growing as a band, which is hard to do after 30 years. And I am friends with the lead singer and the drummer. The drummer, Steve Hindelong, he co-wrote God of Wonders with Mark Byrd. I am friends with the guy that wrote God of Wonders, but I'm not really. I mean, what that means is I get his updates on my computer. That's it. Facebook has cheapened the word friendship, and we're going to look this morning at five different ways, five different qualities, I guess you could say, of real friends, real friendship. From the book of Proverbs. And again, I could have gone a lot of places if I was going outside of Proverbs. I could have talked about David and Jonathan or Naomi and Ruth or Jesus and his disciples. I could have gone a lot of places, but we're going to stick to Proverbs. There are some Proverbs in here that I didn't know existed until I studied this. There's some fantastic ones. There's some incredibly funny ones that we'll get to close to the end that have some good practical wisdom to them as well. As is usual with this series, rather than take a big chunk of scripture and go through it and explain what it means and so on, the way Proverbs works is they're little one-off sayings all the way through. So we're going to be going through and reading a whole bunch of sayings that Proverbs has to share with us about friendship. If you want to try to keep up with flipping through them and reading them all, God bless you. If not, you know that thanks to Kitty, these messages and all the scriptures that we read will be on the church website, so you can review them later and check up on me and make sure I wasn't lying with what I was telling you here. But that was a message for another week. So, friendships. Qualities of friendship. What makes a real friend? Actually, one more disclaimer. I say this all the time. Maybe I'm saying it to me more than to you. But whenever we do this, the temptation is to think, is to go through the friends you have in your head and think, are they this? Are they this? Are they this? I don't want you to do that this morning. I don't want you to think primarily of the friends that you have and judge them according to these five qualities that I'm going to share with you. Instead, I want you to turn your gaze inward and think, am I being this sort of friend? Am I being this friend to the people around me? Am I this sort of person? Because you can't change the people around you. I mean, I guarantee if you're thinking of a friend and they don't live up to these qualities, if you take them a copy of my sermon and say, here, read this and get better, it's not going to work. In fact, it might take things the other way quicker. But we can change our own hearts with the power of the Holy Spirit working in us. And so that's what our goal is. We're going to look at these five qualities and how can we change our hearts to be better friends to the people around us. So, first off, good friends are not fickle. And I could have called this Can't Buy Me Love. I put some of the scriptures up there. I didn't type them all out, so I'll be just reading some as we go. But we'll start with Proverbs 14:20. This is all about money and about how rich people seem to have lots of friends really quickly, and when they become poor, they have friends no more. So, Proverbs 14:20. The poor is disliked, even by his neighbor. The rich has many friends. It's like the cynical look. Or Proverbs 19:4. Wealth brings many new friends, but a poor man is deserted by his friend. It's one of those sad but true proverbs. Wealth brings many new friends, but a poor man is deserted even by his friend. Or how about Proverbs 19:6-7? Many seek the favor of a generous man, and everyone is a friend to a man who gives gifts. Isn't that true? Everyone is a friend. Going back to the Facebook analogy, corporations have got on this bandwagon, and if you like them, they give you things. Everyone is a friend to the man or the woman who gives gifts. All a poor man's brothers hate him. How much do his friends go far from him? There's this cynical look. And now some of the Proverbs were compiled. Some of these Proverbs were written by King Solomon. And do you know what his reputation was? He was one of the wealthiest people in existence, in history. In 2 Chronicles chapter 1, there's that famous moment where Solomon is praying and God says, ask anything and I'll give it to you. If you've ever seen the Lotto 649 commercial, that always flips through my head when I hear that. Ask anything and I'll give it to you. And Solomon said, well, as the king, Lord, I am going to need divine wisdom if I'm going to be able to be an effective king and govern your people. That's what he asked for. He could have asked for anything. God said, ask anything and I'll give it to you. Open book. Here it is. Ask me. And Solomon says, I need wisdom to care for this people that you've put me in charge of. So God says, okay, good answer. I'll give you that wisdom. But I will also bless you in other ways that you didn't ask. And one of the ways that God blessed Solomon is he made him one of the richest people in history. He was king over Israel at a time in Israel's life where the nations around them were in an uneasy peace, so Israel was able to flourish. See, most of Israel's life was spent either fighting the people to the northeast or fighting the people to the southwest. But at the time of Solomon's reign, there was relative peace. So all of a sudden, all this money flowed in and this grand temple was built. And Solomon was incredibly wealthy. And I don't know how many or which ones of these proverbs he actually penned himself, but I can just hear him cynically thinking in his mind, yeah, everyone's friends with a rich man. Everyone wants to be my friend because I give them things. Wealth brings many new friends, but a poor man is deserted even by his friends. The implication, of course, is if you lose your money, do you lose your friends? And then the flip side that we're looking at is if you're friends with someone who's wealthy and has come on hard times, do we stick with them? I don't care too much for money. Money can't buy me love, right? The old Beatles song. Every point that I reflected on here, I had song lyrics coming through my head of different eras and different bands. But you can't get too much from song lyrics, because after they wrote Can't Buy Me Love, they said, money, 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 that's what I want. That's what I want. Yeah, just give me money. That's what I want. But it's true. Money can't buy friends. Can't buy real friends. And so the application of this first one, good friends are not fickle, they don't come and go with money, is because we want to make it about ourselves, right? Make friends with people outside your socioeconomic comfort zone. It's easy to make friends with the people that are kind of at the same, I hate talking this way, but at the same level as us in the eyes of the world. You know, you have the same sort of lifestyle, it's easy to become friends with those people. Make friends with people across the spectrum. Make friends with people wealthier than you. Make friends with people poorer than you, and let that recede into the background, because people are people. Real friends, good friends, are not fickle. They don't come and go with money. Second thing I wanted to point out is that good friends are few. It's hard. I'll read the proverb here. Proverb 18:24. You like that little friend request picture? One of the sad things I learned before I get to the proverb, when I was looking at this topic this week, is there are actually YouTube videos that are created to explain to you how to automatically get an insane amount of friends. There's add-ons for your browsers that you can install that if you just do the stuff and set them up, it'll automatically make and create friends. They're like little friend viruses. So if you need your ego stroked, you can just do that and have this insane amount of friends. A man of many companions may run to ruin, may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Do you see the contrast there? Many companions contrasted with a friend. A man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. How many real friends do you have? How many friends do you have that know you, all of you, really well? You know, I was really thinking about this week, and I've got two. There's two people in this world that know me more than anyone else. There's Donna, obviously. And I mean that sincerely. The whole friendship and spouseship thing, they overlap quite a bit. She knows me better than anyone. But, and then, as you probably guessed, I got this friend named Brian and Wawa that I drag down every once in a while, who's just as insane as me, and him and I know each other. And I wouldn't trade in one solid friendship like that for 100 pretty good acquaintances. There's something about having a deep friend, someone that you can rely on, someone that you know will be with you, someone that isn't afraid to speak honestly to you, someone that you can share, you can bare your soul with. That's what's valuable. A man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. This time the song lyric was Eddie Vedder's Just Breathe from the Into the Wild soundtrack. I'm a lucky man to count on both hands the ones I love. It's a real good song lyric. I'm a lucky man to count on both hands the ones I love. You know, this might sound cliche, but as we're looking at these, I don't believe that proverb was a specific prophecy about some time to come, but sometimes I think when the Holy Spirit's inspiring these authors, he just gives them this little little glimmer of wisdom that they couldn't have even known when they were writing about it, but it becomes clear later. And when we think about Jesus, if you're talking about a friend, as cheesy and as corny as it sounds, it is absolute, utter truth that Jesus is the one friend that any of us can have that stick closer to a brother. It almost sounds arrogant to think that Jesus would be our, quote, friend. But he is. I wanted to read John 15. When Jesus is talking to his disciples. John 15, 12 to 15. This is my commandment, that you love one another, just like I've loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. No longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing. But I have called you friends. Think about that. The Son of God saying to the people around him, I don't call you servants anymore. I call you friends. Because all that I've heard from my Father, I've made known to you. Jesus is our friend that sticks through us, with us, through any time. Even, heaven forbid, our closest friends one day turn away from us, Jesus will never turn away from us. That song we sang, nothing can separate, even if I ran away. It's echoes of Psalm 139. If I fly to the highest heavens, God, you're there. If I go to the depths of hell and I make my bed there, I find that, God, you're already there waiting for me. God will never leave us. It's easy with Facebook to have a lot of friends, but true friends, a true friend, is a valuable thing. Good friends are not fickle. Good friends are few. Third thing, good friends stick with you. This is a proverb you may have heard before, 17:17. A friend loves at all times. A friend loves at all times. And a brother is born for adversity. Or 27:10, do not forsake your friend and your father's friend. Do not forsake your friends or your father's friend. Do not go to your brother's house in the day of your calamity. It's better to have a neighbor who is near than a brother who is far away. That was a radical thing to say in that culture. We would agree that family is important. But to us, family is nowhere near as important as it was to the people living in this culture. In the ancient Near East, family was everything. One of the most treasured things that they had was the scroll that had their lineage written on it. I mean, family was everything to them. And so to hear this person saying, don't go to your brother's house in your day of calamity. Better a neighbor who is near than a brother who is far away. He's saying it's better to have a friend next to you that you can run to if your brother's in the next town over. It's a radical thing to say. Good friends stick with you through everything. You know by now that one of my heroes that I've read a lot of is C.S. Lewis. It's, again, a kind of cliche thing to have. Most Christians, pastors that I know of, count C.S. Lewis as one of their influences. But I don't know if you know about his personal life. He developed this deep friendship with this lady named Joy over in America. He was British. And she came over on the boat to meet him with her son. And they hit it off well as friends because C.S. Lewis was such a bright man. It's hard to have friends when you're as bright as him because you'd need to keep up with him. Joy was this woman who was incredibly bright as well. And she was like a counterbalance. She could keep up with him. So when he was saying something witty, she'd be right there. When he was studying something, she could understand it. They developed this deep friendship that was just incredible. Good friends stick with you. The first hard time, real hard time, came when Joy had got to England for the second time. Her son was in school over there. They were starting a life there. And she was going to be deported back to America because she didn't have things set up properly. So what did C.S. Lewis decide to do? He knew a solution to it. Let's just go to the town clerk and get married. So went to the town clerk, got a civil marriage. They still lived in different homes. They were friends. But he went to the extent of going to work to the town to marry her, to keep her in the country. Good friends stick with you. Then a year later, she had a fall. And you may know this part of the story. She had a fall, was taken to the hospital, and was diagnosed with incurable cancer that had gone all through her body. And so what did Lewis decide to do? He called up a minister, brought the minister to the hotel bed, and got married to her for real. A real friend loves at all times. That sort of stick-with-you friendship is rare, but it's to be valued. So let me ask you, what friends do you have that need you right now? How can you be that sort of stick-with-it friend? Think about the friends you have. Who needs you? Who could you go over and above toward? Who could you be there for in a way that will just blow their minds and demonstrate your real biblically based friendship to them? Good friends stick with you. Good friends are real honest. I know that's not the best English, but good friends are, I was going to say good friends are honest, but good friends are really honest. Proverbs 27:6, faithful are the wounds of a friend. Friends can hurt you. Do you know that? Faithful are the wounds of a friend. Profuse are the kisses of an enemy. Again, I think there's a little bit of a almost a foreshadowing of Judas and Jesus with the kiss. But faithful are the wounds of a friend. On the other hand, profuse are the kisses of an enemy. Or how about Proverbs 27:9? Oil and perfume make the heart glad, and the sweetness of a friend comes from his earnest counsel. His deep counsel. Her deep counsel with her friend. Or this is one that you've probably heard many times. Proverbs 27:17. Iron sharpens iron. One man sharpens another. Iron sharpens iron. One woman sharpens another. I love having sharp knives at home. So that sounds really creepy when I say it here. I like my knives to be sharp. Ed, you would understand. Sharp knives are safe knives because they don't have a tendency to skitter off whatever you're cutting and go into your hand. So I like having a sharp knife, and I have my sharpening stone downstairs, and I have a water stone of the appropriate grit, and I get my kitchen knives just sharpened up just perfect, and then I get it on I have a ceramic stone with a finer honing to get it honed right down to almost perfect. But then as you use your knives, they get little nicks and little burrs on them and stuff like that. And I have this, you've probably seen them, like a steel rod. And I know they say you're supposed to hold the steel rod down like this and sharpen your knife on both sides. Just hone it like that against with the right angle on it. You know what I mean? The steel rod, the knife thing. But I like looking cool, so I hold it up in the air, of course. And I try to see how fast I can go to be cool like the people on TV. And it used to mesmerize my child, Chase. He could be having the worst day of it. I think he's past it now, but there was a time where he could be having the worst day of his life, grumpy as anything, and if he'd hear the sound of that knife on metal going, he'd look up and smile at me like I was a magician. It was awesome. But that's just to illustrate the fact that iron sharpens iron. Friends that are honest with each other help each other. They balance each other. They sometimes it's not even a pleasant experience. It's like friends are able to grind the rough edges off each other. Friends are able to talk to each other in a way that if you... I'll give you an example. My buddy Brian, he can say things to me that none of you could. we talk almost every week, and sometimes I'll say, yeah, I'm thinking of doing this with the church, and he'd be like, sure. Sure, that's something. But more often than not, our excitement just builds off each other. Iron sharpens iron. I talked last week about having tact, and tact is being able to say the right words at the right time. Remember I talked about that girl in Bible college who came to me all excited she was getting married, and I said, the right thing at the wrong time? I'll talk to you later about it if you didn't hear it. But tact is being able to say the right thing at the right time. This point, good friends are real honest, reminds us that we can't be waiting forever for the right time. We can be so concerned with being tactful that we never end up saying what needs to be said. And if you have a good friend, don't just go try this with a random Facebook acquaintance, but if you have a good friend, a deep friend, you should be able to speak to them truly and honestly in a way that might even wound a little bit at the time, but your intention is not to wound, your intention is to bring out truth. But again, my point is not to say, look at all the friends around you and who can you stab with your truth sword. My point is to say, do you allow your friends to speak to you like that? Your closest friends, do they have the freedom to just speak honestly and plainly into your life without you being offended? Are your friends able to be honest that way with you? That's something valuable. It can't come through Facebook. Good friends are not fickle. They don't come and go with money. Good friends are few. Better a good friend than a ton of acquaintances. Good friends stick with you no matter what situation you're going through. How can you be there for your friends? Good friends are very honest, are able to even wound at times with words to make you grow together and become stronger. And finally, and this is the one that I thought was just fantastic, good friends know boundaries. Now, I hate the word boundaries because oftentimes it's used as an excuse to not do what Jesus has asked us to do. Oh, I have to set my boundaries, right? But I think it's the only... The other title I was going to put for this point is Don't Be a Jerk. But I didn't think that would translate well on the big screen. So, good friends know boundaries. It sounds more religious, right? I have three more proverbs to go through, and these are my favorite. First of all, let your foot be seldom in your neighbor's house, lest he have his fill of you and hate you. There's good wisdom there, right? That just means don't be always at your friend's place because they'll eventually get tired of you. Everyone needs their space. Know your boundaries. Know their boundaries. Let your foot be seldom in your neighbor's house, lest he have his fill of you and hate you. Remember when I said good morning to you this morning? I said we'd be talking about it later. This is the next one. Whoever, and the sarcasm is so rich here. Proverbs 27:14. Whoever blesses his neighbor with a loud voice, rising early in the morning, will be counted as cursing. Isn't that fantastic? Don't bless your neighbors in a loud voice in the morning if they want to sleep, is what he's saying. I love it. Whoever blesses his neighbor with a loud voice, rising early in the morning, will be counted as cursing. You know, we're not all alike. We're all different. Some people like to get up early in the morning. Some people don't. The people who like to get up early in the morning, don't pretend you have the moral authority to wake up those who don't like to get up early in the morning. Some people are just built differently. That's what he's getting at here. My buddy Brian, since we're talking about friends, it was notorious when we started camping together. When we started camping together, he had young kids. I had my kids later. And we'd be off and for 3 or 4 days, and invariably he would grow just homesick to see his kids again on the last night of the camping trip. And so I knew that night we were getting up the next day at 4 in the morning or 5 in the morning or something like that. It always happened. You'd be laying there, your last day of your camping trip, you just want to wake up and make your way back to the car and have a good meal and go home. And it would be, he would be lying awake from about 3 o'clock on, and as soon as the clock ticked like 4:30, okay guys, get up, time to pack camp. And it was counted as cursing many times. But you see, we have the friendship where we're able to speak honestly with each other, and iron sharpens iron. And so now what he does is, and it's fantastic, he gets up first all the time, I think because he just can't sleep long on rocks. So he gets up first, and he goes out and starts up the coffee, and then once the water's boiled, he'll say, okay, boys, it's coffee time. And that's how he wakes us up, and that's not counted as cursing. That's a joy. Whoever blesses his neighbor with a loud voice rising early in the morning, it will be counted as cursing. And finally, I like this one too. This is the last one. Proverbs 26, 18 and 19. Like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death. Not to be overdramatic. Is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, I'm just kidding. Did you know that there is proverbs about practical jokes? I had no idea until I studied it. Like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, oh, I'm just joking. This is a proverb about practical jokes. And now I feel like I have to publicly apologize to Daryl. Because I pulled a practical joke on him a little while ago, I thought he'd share it because I thought it was kind of funny. So he had to miss this one board meeting that we had, and we tried to reschedule it, and everyone's schedules were up, so we had to do it. And so we chatted before the board meeting and made sure we're on the same page with everything we're deciding, but he went away. And so we had our board meeting and wrote up all the minutes for it, and then Chris Tong, right at the end, he goes, any chance you could create a second set of minutes just for Daryl? And I thought, why, yes, I can. So if you saw the board minutes that I fabricated, his name was on like every line. Daryl's going to do this. Daryl's going to do that. Daryl's going to do this. Daryl's going to do that. And I put it in an envelope with all the rest and handed it out. But now I know, like a madman who throws firebrands, cursing, and death. Is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, I'm only joking. The proverb here is you can go too far, right? You can take jokes too far. And if you want to be a good friend, know your boundaries. You can joke to a certain point. I think we're on good terms. But you can take it too far as well. Know what that is. Just practical wisdom here. Know how to be a good friend by examining how you behave. So we had a lot of fun with these scriptures on being a friend, because I enjoy taking scripture with a smile. But at the same time, there's something very serious and very important about being a good friend, because a good friend can change someone's life. God, as you become good friends to the people around you, God can work through that relationship to change that person and to change you in the process. God can work through us to change the people around us if we're willing to open up and become good friends to them. So that's what I want to challenge you to. Think about the people you know and ask yourself, how can I become a better godly friend to those people? And just see what'll happen.